Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. I'll try and, as the Chair has indicated, try and gallop through this presentation so that we can allow for more questions. The financial information presentation is made of two parts. One part is the main vote, which is the DPW main vote, and the second part is the property management trading entity. I will then start with the main vote as the first financial statements to go through. In terms of the table of contents that I'm going to cover, I'll just touch on the audit outcomes and the historical trend on the audit outcomes, then talk about the changes to the program budget structure, what environments and shifting of funds have we implemented, and then get into the set of financial statements as required by the National Treasury Guidelines, one being the appropriation statement, the statement of financial performance, and financial position, and then thereafter go into the notes to pick up the notes that I know would be of interest to the committee. Just as a quick recap in terms of where we are coming from for the main vote, you will realize that I've put bars there, going from the left to the right, and starting from the years 2011-12, 12-13, 13-14, 14-15, and the year under review. When you go back to the 2011-12 financial year, you'll realize that the department had a disclaimer, a disclaimed audit outcome, which meant that things were so chaotic that the Auditor General could not even express an opinion on the accounts of the department. And there were somewhere about 8 items listed that were problematic. And it just didn't go back to 10-11 financial year because in that year, I think we had about 13 items that were problematic. So that's a result of the disclaimer in 11-12. Then we instituted or activated the turnaround program, and the immediate result of the turnaround was an improved audit outcome as in a qualification, with 3 items listed as the basis of a qualification in 12-13. And then 13-14, the department then improved its fortunes to an unqualified audit outcome, 13-14, which outcome we've maintained in the 3 successive years up to this year under review. And when you look at the actual basis of the issues that were raising emphasis of matter, you'll realize these are also being worked down quite significantly, moving from 3 items in the prior year to 2 in this current year that we are considering. So in essence, what we're saying is we are really moving in the right direction, and as the DG and the Minister indicated earlier, that the actual issue that we have for between us and a clean audit for the main vote is the issues related to the EPWP, because the punitive issues that relate to the non-reporting are being borne by the department, whereas in actual fact, the role that we play is coordinator and the municipalities and the provinces being the ones who keep records and all that. So that's the issue that really is standing between the department in the main vote achieving a clean audit outcome, which we believe we'll be able to achieve in the near future. Just to provide a little bit of context in terms of the accounts that you are considering, one, you will recall that we had a transfer of functions as part of the operationalization of the PMTE. All functions that were there related to the PMTE were, in actual fact, sitting in the main vote. What we then decided is to then distinguish the function or the purpose of the main vote from what the PMTE should be, the main vote, or being the department, being a policy setter, and doing the coordination of the sector, the public sector, whereas the implementation in terms of our projects for construction, in terms of our property management, being moved to the PMTE. So we had functions that were transferred from the main board to the PMTE in 14-15. However, the budget for those functions that were transferred were only moved in the year 15-16. This will give you an indication of the difference of numbers when you compare year on year because of the effect of the transfer, which I'll get into later on. And then what we did is, in terms of the change in focus of the main vote, what we did is we then also reorganize the program budget structure for the main vote to talk to what we are doing in the main vote, and that program budget structure, the first year that we are reporting in terms of the, program budget structure is the year that we are considering the annual report of which we are considering now. Like I said, the function of the budget was transferred in the current year, and as such, for us to be able to do a comparative year on year, we have tried to assist members in understanding the numbers for comparative purposes by restating the prior year as if we actually had a transfer function in the prior year for comparative purposes, and the prior year that I'm referring to being the 14-15 financial year. So that's what we've done. Just as an indication on slide 54, slide 54 just gives you the differences of the program budget structures in terms of the 14-15 financial year and the 15-16 financial year. The program numbers have remained the same, program five programs, where program one is administration, and that's how it goes. When you look at the 14-15 financial year, and I think that's why we are trying to do this for purposes of understanding, is the fact that the allocations per program has significantly changed. The bottom number in terms of the actual allocation from the national fiscus to the main vote has literally remained the same. But the programs, in terms of the allocation between the programs, has changed. And similarly, that you'll also see in terms of the economic classifications that we will be presenting. So when you look at program one, in 14-15, you see administration. There's an allocation in 14-15 of 1.2 billion rands. And I think the question will be from the members, whoa, what happened to the rest of the money? Because now in program one, in 15-16, you're looking at 480 million rands. So there's a huge disjuncture. And that's what we'll try and make it, make our members try and comprehend better. Program two, same, EPWP almost remain the same. And then the question will be on program four, property and construction industry policy regulation, where in the prior year we had 34 million rands. In the current year, we're looking at about 3.7 billion rands. And those are the kind of questions that you'll be wanting to know what resulted in that. And similarly with the program five, which has changed its name from auxiliary and associated services to prestige policy, and we'll do that. When we look at the bottom number, like I said, you see 14-15 allocation being about 6.1 billion as compared to 15-16 of 6.3. And as you can see that, you literally almost realize that it's just an inflationary increase that we've actually been given in terms of the allocation from the national fiscus for the operations of the main vote. Getting on to the appropriation statement itself, what we do is we indicate what the adjusted appropriation was. And the adjusted appropriation is, members will recall that there's a published T&E expenditure, estimates of national expenditure at the beginning of the year against which we've got to spend. And then 6 months down the line of the year, we then have to review the performance against those allocations and then revise our estimates of national expenditure. And that gives rise to this column called adjusted appropriation. And that's now the one that we take right up to the year end and we report against. What we do is then we do a reprioritization by shifting funds to try and deal with the issues of gaps where they exist and excesses where they exist and try and, as you call it, balance the budget, basically. So you shift the funds, we do the vitamins, and to get us a final appropriation per program. So slide 55 just indicates the shifting of the funds that we've done. For instance, in administration program one, we shifted funds to the, out of current payments to payment for financial assets of about 29 million rand, and the question is why. And if you can see, it's an in and out, so these cancel out. And that related to the write-offs that we need to do for the recoveries or the receivables that we did not believe we were going to get, relating to some old debts that were there on the buildings that was of the department that was flooded, and there's been a long cases going on. to the point that we got a legal opinion that the amount will not be recoverable, so we had to write it off, and that's the 29 million rand. Because we had a surplus under current payments, we utilized that surplus to do the shift of the funds to payments of financial assets to be able to write that off. In program two, for instance, there's a 12 million rands out of current payments into payment for financial assets. And that related to also another write-off that we had of the South African Institute of Architects for the hosting of an international architectural conference which happened in Durban, very successful conference. They believe that they are going to raise the money to be able to repay us. We guaranteed the amount going back many years up until the conference happened. So that 12 million rand indicates the write-off of that irrecoverable amount of money from the Architects Institute. Then in terms of Program 3, you will see we had also got a 12 million rand out of current payments and 12 into transfers. That are just to normalize the situation of the Agrima SA. Agrima SA, by virtue of it being established as an entity now, the allocations or the funds were sitting under current payments, and now that it is an entity, the money that we gave to Agrima must be classified under transfers, so it is the movement of the funds to deal with that. And so it goes on. On slide 56, we continue in terms of the explanatory notes that relate to the other environments that we've done, especially under Prestige, compensation of employees. We've moved out 12.9 million and increased the payments for capital assets, and there is the shortfall for funding for the write-offs approved by the accounting officer relating to that Isivuno building that I spoke about. And under Prestige as well, goods and services were reduced by 292 and increased the payment for financial assets to do the SAIA, just the short the gap that existed. And under Prestige again, Program 5, we moved from machinery equipment to the 3,000 and moved it to machinery equipment under the property and construction policy branch to offset the overspending under machinery equipment in that area. And under the property and construction industry policy, we moved from goods and services, 12 million, to transfers to sort out the Agrima asset, as well as the South African Council for Landscape Architects. Continuing on slide 57, now what it does is it shows the appropriation statement, what was the actual expenditure per program against the appropriation, and just to indicate the level of under or over expenditure that you had. And the net effect is on slide 57, 58, because it's a continuation of the same per program, and if you list all the programs, the actual expenditure at the bottom right-hand quadrant is a number 99.5%, which indicates we had spent 99.5% of our allocation in the current year, which means we have an under expenditure of 0.5%, basically. And if you look at it, it's about 31 million rand, and because the number 31 million rand, 0.5% of the total allocation of 6.3 billion rand. That was the under expenditure. And the areas of under expenditure that indicate where the contribution comes from is listed, as you can see, in terms of the variance on slide 57 and 58 to arrive at 99.9% expenditure. I've in a way dealt with the slide 59 and slide 60, and I would then move to, just as a comparison, slide 61. Slide 61, honorable members and chair, is just indicates the year-on-year comparative. What was the actual economic classification allocations year-on-year? And as you can see, if you take 14-15 and you take 15-16, for instance, compensation of employees, in the current financial year, the allocation was 454, but in the prior year, 1.6 million. When you take the current year, What are the actual expenditure against the appropriation? That was 435, which had 19 million rands under expenditure variance that we had. And so it goes. The reason why these things are happening in terms of the year-on-year comparative, as I said, was as a result of the transfer of the budget in the current year to the PMTE related to the functions of the PMTE that were transferred. And if you compare, what we then did is that we did a restatement, which you'll see in the slide that follows, the second slide that will follow. However, when we just do the quick variance analysis to explain what happened, and that you can see on the pages 149 to 151 of the annual report, one is compensation of employees and the spending of 19 million is mainly due to delay in filling vacant positions for program 3, which is the EPWP, about 10 million, and 5 million in program 4, as well as program 5, 3.5. And the reason being, the adverts happened towards the latter part of the year, and those positions could not be filled. Goods and services and the spending of 6.3 million is due to late receipt of invoices that could not be processed before the financial year end. This will now be spent in the current financial year, and it will be included as part of our accruals in the previous year. The transfers and subsidies, the number is fairly small. However, we have an amount of 600,000 rands which we have withheld on the EPWP integrated grant to provinces because of the non-compliance by the Northern Cape Provincial Department of Health in terms of the DORA requirements. Then payments for capital assets, we underspend by 4.5 due to funds committed but not spent at the end of the financial year, and these also will be held as accruals. Now, if we take the prior figures and restate them as if in the prior year we actually had the program by the structure as we have it in the current year, you can see the comparisons starting to kind of make sense. You take 14-15 column, which is the last two columns on the right, and the 15-16 columns. And if you compare the two, like appropriation for compensation, in the current year was 454 million or 455 million. In the prior year was 391 million. And we'll try and assist in terms of the explanatory explanations with respect to those different allocations. Goods and services last year was 637, and this year is 370. We will also indicate why that decrease happened. And the transfers, the different transfers that you can see there, provinces and municipalities, marginal difference because it's the same for in terms of the EPWP. I think the big numbers that we are talking to, or the number that is compares very well, is the departmental agencies and accounts, because we've restated the actual program structure and budget allocation to reflect as if it was the same, and that's about 3.2 million. And that's where the transfers of all the agencies, PMTE, CIDB, CBE, all are sitting. And so the comparison in terms of now, slide 64, to try and explain the differences. Compensation of employees, like I said, there has been an increase in terms of the allocation, and the increase in compensation of employees especially relates to we insourced our security as part of our job creation drive. We insourced security and so that we can reduce our consultants' expenditure. So we took the security that was out there, which came through service providers, and we actually employed the people full-time. Similarly, the consultants that were in ICT doing work for our ICT support were coming through the consultancy route. We then decided we might as well just have these people in the establishment of the department. And then in addition to that, we also had to engage additional capacity for the business improvement unit to drive our turnaround. And then we also filling the vacant positions with EPWP and other branches. Goods and services, as I indicated, there has been a decrease. Last year, 637 versus 370. The decrease in expenditure for goods and services compared to 14-15 was as a result of the completed projects for the turnaround program, specifically and more importantly, the clean audit project. That was one of the major projects that we undertook in the 14-15, which was then completed in the 14-15 financial year. And then once-off expenditure for the 2014 inauguration that happened in the year and the issues of state funerals. And then transferred turnaround program budget on the immovable assets and lease review that was transferred to the PMTE. Then the transfers. The transfers in totality, as you can see, the individual details there on slide 63. The expenditure increased in line with the inflationary adjustment and included in the transfers is the PMTE spending functions. Like I said, those functions were transferred and the associated budget where those functions were also transferred according to the principles of funds follow functions. We had to apply that. And that's included in that. Then payments for capital assets, decreasing the machinery and equipment expenditure in 15-16, apologies, not 15-17, relates to once-off procurement of furniture for the prestige management. You will recall that in the prior year, we had actually refurbished most of the houses, the serial houses, as well as the villages to renew the furniture in there. And the transfer of the budget to the PMT in line with the transfer function and procurement of IT servers and the accruals of computer hardware equipment, 16 million for expenditure relating to 13-14, which was incurred in the prior year, hence the amount indicating a higher amount. Moving on to slide 66, we are just trying to flesh out a number and an area that no members like is the issues around the spend on consultants, contractors, and agencies / outsourced services. And that you can see on slide on page 149 of the report. You can see a considerable decrease in terms of the spend there. One is most of the turnaround projects having come to an end, so the expenditure having reduced. I think I did indicate, 2 years ago when I did say there was a spike in our consultant spend because we had just activated the turnaround project and had said to get external intervention to come in our assistance. And we did indicate that over time, that expenditure is going to come down considerably. And that's what we can see in there, over and above the fact that we also have transferred some of the functions to the PMTE. But the amount, when you compare year on year, in terms of the main board, we get an amount of 467 million rands in 14-15 compared to 209 in the 15-16 financial year. And slide 66, we make an attempt at trying to explain the actual areas where the reduction happened. In terms of business and advisory services, the reduction in expenditure was due to transfer of budget allocation related to the PMT turnaround project, which is on your asset register rebuild program, as well as regular expenditure that we had to do in the prior. And then we also reduced the number of settlements that we had in the current year. In our infrastructure and planning, this all relates to third parties or service providers that we utilize to assist in the EPW projects. And that's the expenditure that relates to that there. Legal services, we literally reduced the number of cases that were engaged in compared to the previous year. And the contractors' expenditure is low due to fewer state functions and state funerals compared to 14-15 financial year. And the high expenditure in 14-15, like you said, related to the inauguration that happened then in that year. And then the agency and support services, the transfer of the budget allocation for the turnaround project in line with the transfer of function. In terms of the work that the SIU does, we've moved the funds that relate to that to the PMTE because most of it relates to the PMTE as well as the lease review project that we undertook to clean up our leasing portfolio. The expenditure reported under the PMTE, like I said, and then we also completed the clean audit project in the year 14-15, and as a result, in the 15-16 financial year, there is no expenditure related to clean audit project. Moving on to slide 68, where we are dealing with the financial performance, which is the performance of how we spend the money. We take our revenues and say what expenditures we have against those revenues and report either a surplus or a deficit. And like we say, the revenues, there's two sources of revenue that we have. One is the annual appropriation, the Council of National Fiscals, and then two is the departmental revenue. Departmental revenue relates to small kind of things that we do, like selling of tenders, the parking bay, money that we collect, all of that. That's the amount of money that we collect and that constitutes our revenue. The expenditures against that revenue, again, will indicate compensation of employees, goods and services, interest on rent, and so it goes. So it is literally just taking the finance, the appropriation statement and readjusting it to be able to report in terms of the financial performance. The bottom number, as you can see, is that we have a surplus of 38 million in the current year compared to 115 million rands in the prior, if you take the expenditures against that. Remember, this accounting here is an accounting for cash basis. And the 38 million rands, if you recall, you'll see, talks to the under expenditure that we indicated earlier on when we said we spend 99.5% of our budget, and more or less, which is about 31 million, which compares pretty well with the surplus that we've indicated of 38 million rand. We know that it is not an ideal thing to go for any surplus in government. We need to spend for purposes of service delivery. And so that's where it's at. In terms of slide 69, just explanatory notes to the expenditure variance. One is the annual appropriation, the increase of 191 in the budget allocation relates to the year-on-year annual inflationary increase for salary adjustments and increase in price for goods and services. Departmental revenue decrease due to the rental of tender documents revenue being transferred to the PMT in line with the transfer function. Compensation, the total allocation for compensation of employees decreased with the transfer functions to the PMT. Like we said, if you compare year on year, it's like comparing chalk and cheese kind of thing because of the change in the program budget structure. Including compensation of employees in the prior figure, there's about an amount of 1.3 billion rands, which relates to the compensation of employees for the PMTE. And as you strip it out, and then you can see that you can compare the one figure in the main vote with the other one after that adjustment. Goods and services, total allocation for goods and services decreased with the transfer functions, the PMTE. Transferred goods and services budget allocation includes 522 million rands for office accommodation, which is the office accommodation of our 11 regional offices, plus our internal audit, which is somewhere in town, as well as our EPWP. That's the cost of us. The internal projects like regular expenditure list review, the SIU, the Immovable Asset Register Rebuild Program, that is the PMT, were transferred with the budget spending reported under the PMTE, not in the main one. Then some of the turnaround projects like the finance technical support were completed in 14-15, therefore resulting in decreased spending in 15-16. The interest on rent and on land relates to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, 1.5 million rands incurred, which relates to interest on late payments. Transfers and subsidies, increased expenditure in transfers and subsidies relates to the reclassification of the PMT budget to transfers, which is a 3.5 billion rands transferred to the PMTE. Agrima SA budget now classified under transfers and subsidies with the approval of the Agrima SA Act in December 2015. Tangible assets, capital assets, the budget allocation for buildings and other fixtures, structures, which is the infrastructure, which is the DPW capital budget, has now been transferred to the PMTE. The budget for the infrastructure is included in the 3.5 billion rands transferred to the PMTE. And the machinery equipment expenditure decreased for the transfer functions, as well as high expenditure in 14-15 includes 3.8 million for prestige management for the houses, as I did indicate, for the new administration. And then payments for financial access, expenditure increase relates to approval grant for the write-off of Isibunu building, which I indicated, and the South African Institute of Architects for the conference that was held, amounts of which were irrecoverable. Then the balance relates to bursaries for non-employees, and that's for former employees which were taken off, basically. Slide 71 gives the financial position, which is the balance sheet of the department, if you, you know, try and interpret it. Shows the assets and shows the liabilities and shows whether we have a net asset or a net liability situation, which you can see we certainly had a 4.9 million rands or almost a 5 million rands net asset position compared to 10.6 in the prior year of the net assets. And the net assets under current assets, we have categorized the following current assets. One is an unauthorized expenditure of 261 million rand, which number and figure has not changed in the current year versus the prior year. The cash and cash equivalents, prepayments and advances and receivables. I will reflect on the unauthorized expenditure later on, just to indicate what is the makeup of this unauthorized expenditure and the aging of this unauthorized expenditure for purposes of the members. And then non-current assets, the receivables and the liabilities, indicating that we have a bank overdraft in the main vote of about 648 million rand, which also can be explained in relation to the receivables as well as the unauthorized expenditure that we have. We put that up as well. Under slide 72, the unauthorized expenditure was reported way back, and it just explains the rest of the other things that indicate what we are doing. And in terms of that, you can see the departmental revenue to be surrendered to the revenue fund. Revenue collected from sales of tender documents, interest on advances to NET, receipt on prior expenditure, not disallowed and stop parking. Parking rental, revenue transferred to the PMT, hence lower collection in the financial year. Going to those expenditure items that I was saying we will try and the receivables items that I've set, I will try and reflect on. One is the unauthorized expenditure sitting at 261 million rand. One is overspending on compensation of employees. And if you look at it, honorable members, this goes back to 2008-09. I know that in the prior year, a resolution was taken by this committee to that we need to get the matter resolved to the National Treasury. In addition to that, the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, SCOPA, also gave an instruction for the resolution of this unauthorized expenditure. And we have submitted all we needed to submit to Treasury for the resolution of this matter. So the matter is sitting with the Treasury as I'm talking now. But the amounts go back to 2008 and 2009. And when you look at it, the overspending on compensation of employees, overspending on goods and services, unauthorized expenditure as a result of capital expenditure on schools. You recall there was that eradication of math schools going back in those years, and we actually spent a lot of money to assist with the plight of our learners to move them away from math schools and build permanent structures both in the Eastern Cape and the Northwest. And that money, because the building of schools is not a competence of the National Department of Public Works, was deemed to be unauthorized expenditure. All we know is that the assets were created, and those schools are currently being used as well. Then you've got overspending on capital assets and overspending on transfers and subsidies, giving us the 261 million rands going back. The next slide just indicates where that is. The compensation of employees, 67.1 million. Where does that come from? 2008 and 9 was 48.84 million, which related to Program 1, which was a whole program that was driven to capacitate the department. And then 11-12, 18.3 million. Goods and services, 13.6, made up of that 9.6 EPWP and 3.9 on the energy efficiency project. The EPWP was part of the decision to massify and extend the EPWP program further. Transfers and subsidies, small numbers there, and the payments of capital assets, which is 178 million rand. That's what relates to the math schools that I spoke about. together with the furniture, which is about 3.9 or 4 million, and the rest of the money is construction of the actual assets called the MUT schools. Like I said, these amounts are still under consideration by the National Treasury to put before Parliament to vote the unauthorized expenditure away. On slide 75, we are just trying to explain the bank overdraft. Like I said, I will try and explain the bank overdraft for 648 million that I indicated earlier on in the financial position statement, and try and explain it because it was quite a large number, 648. And that 648 number is made up of the following: unauthorized expenditure of 261. Unauthorized expenditure, you would have spent the money, but it would not be recognized as an expenditure. So that you actually, at the end of the year, not to say that you've spent the money, the National Treasury or Fiscal still expects you to return that money that you've spent up until Parliament has voted that money. So it will sit with as an outflow, and you will have returned the money, 261. And then you've got the rest of the other things, prepayments and advances of 11 million, receivables of 500 million, and those receivables, as I indicated earlier on, related much more to the claims from the PMTE, that PMTE had to pay to the department, which the department has paid on behalf of the PMTE. Then you take away the liabilities that you have, the National Treasury revenue not yet paid over, which we're going to have to repatriate because that's the kind of unexpenditure that we needed to show, as well as the revenue that we collected. And then other payables of 83.7 and the recoverable revenue of 5, giving us that 648. It's just a makeup of the bank overdraft. Moving on to the other items that you'll see in your notes to the financial statements, things like the contingent liabilities, they've moved up, and the question would be why. The contingent assets, commitments, accruals, employee benefits, operating lease expenditure, and the finance lease expenditure. In terms of the contingent liabilities, they've increased in the current year due to unconfirmed balance from the Department of International Relations that they expect us to pay them, but we're saying, well, we are disputing the amount, so we've just kept it as a contingent liability. Contingent asset increased in the current year due to the non-security upgrade which we included as part of the thingy, because we did not know the situation at the time as to how we should actually be dealing with this issue of the recovery of 7 million. But the matter, as you know, has been dealt with after our financial year. We had sat to the auditors and agreed that that's how we're going to disclose the item. And then commitments decreased in the current year due to transfer of some of the turnaround projects, which is the regular expenditure in the SIU. Then accruals, which is in 2014-15, it's increase of SIU accruals amounting to 24 million, which is currently disclosed in the PMT in the current year as a reduction. Employee benefits mainly due to increased number of days accrued for leave entitlement by employees. And operating a lease expenditure relates to transfer of office accommodation budget back to the department in the current year. Just quickly, in terms of irregular expenditure, if you compare year on year, we have a total irregular expenditure of 366 million compared to 368. You will recall that in the prior year period, we had set and went through all the detailed transactions as a result of a finding that we had from the auditors, which then necessitated us to go 2 years, going back to 2009-10, and in certain instances, even before that period, and checked all the transactions for irregular expenditure. This was done. In the year under review in 2014-15, we then set up, our focus was on setting up and investigative capacity to be able to deal with this irregular expenditure in terms of what the Treasury guideline indicates, and now we are ready to move with that. But in terms of the current year, what we can say, any new irregular expenditure that we have created in the new year amounts to about 1.6 million rands, so the rest is just old things, basically. And that 1.6 million rands relates to the acquisition or services that are provided and the products or services did not have local content. And I think it is one of our procurement requirements that you must have a particular level of local content for our services. So that's why 923,000 rands, and then there are instances because of emergencies that we had to do where we could not get three quotes, and that's where the 584 comes from. So that really is a number, 1.6 million rands. I think even though it's fairly low compared to the base from where we are coming as a department, it is still not a justification to have any regular expenditure. I think we've taken a zero approach, zero tolerance approach to irregular expenditure, has this massive reduction from that. Fruitless and wasteful, which is on slide 78. The items, I think, it's increased by almost about 1.2 million or 1.7 million. And included in that is an amount of 67,000 which relates to interest paid on overdue pension account of prior year discovered in the current year. So we disclose that it's a wasteful, so that we can investigate it so that we can deal with it accordingly. An amount of 1.5 million rands relates to interest paid on overdue amounts relating to TV licenses. From nowhere, we just got hit by a claim from the South African Broadcasting Corporation of licenses that we had not paid of the televisions that we had. So we had to pay that, and that led it to the interest, the 1.5 million rands interest. So we had to deal with that, yeah. That honourable members, I think, dealt with the main vote. I will then move on to the a little more complex environment, the property management trading entity.
Thank you, sir.
Part B, Chair and honourable members, like I said, deals with the property management trading entity. The table of contents, I will also just have a bit of a reflection of where we are coming from in terms of the audit outcomes, the historical perspective. You'll recall in the main vote, the base going back to 11-12 was a disclaimer. We have ever since moved. Now we're in a period of unqualified audit outcomes. We'll reflect on the PMTE now. We will then deal with the issues in terms of financial results, and then we'll get to the financial position, statement of financial performance, the transfer of the budget in terms of how it has occurred, and deal with the budget in terms of revenue versus actual receipts, in terms of the budget statement, and the expenditures in terms of budget versus the actual. And then we'll do the expenditure analysis for economic classification, try and explain material expenditure variances, and get into the irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure as well, just for an upfront dealing with the matter. Like I said, this is a much more complex environment, and in terms of numbers, we're talking enormous numbers in terms of transactions here. And we know that the department is still in a phase of change, and critical to this change is the issue of the business processes and IT solutions to be able to drive the number of transactions that we are talking about in this environment. I mean, I think we're talking plus minus on a monthly basis somewhere in the order of about 30,000 transactions that have to go through the property management trading entity. And we still are rolling out an ERP system to assist us to be able to do the work and automate our environment. So we have a hybrid in terms of our operating systems. We have a hybrid of extensive cash-based systems, whereas on the one side, we're going to be accounting and preparing the financials on the basis of an accrual-based accounting, which is GRAP compliant. So that's the complexity that I'm trying to talk to and try to get honorable members to kind of comprehend. Now, when you go back to the audit outcomes, we've taken the base year as 11-12, and up to the year under review, which is 15-16. At 11-12, we had a disclaimer listing a number of things. You can see in terms of disclaimer 11-12. We're talking 26 findings. I mean, we could not list all these findings. In addition to the 26 findings, in terms of the account, the numbers that appear on the financials, then there are 27 issues of compliance findings. And in addition to that, we did not do a performance audit for the PMTE at that time. We did the performance audit in the main vote.
The second honorable
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm worried because we have a plenary at 2 o'clock. Now I see the presenter, they are still continuing presenting. What is going to happen?
We are aware of the time, honorable member. Let the presenter continue. We'll soon have time for engagement.
Thanks, Chair. I'll try and assist the committee also by just being a little bit faster. Okay, so so we started 11-12, and now we are sitting in this year with a qualified audit outcome, having moved from a disclaimer. And the question is not just the disclaimer, is the nature of the disclaimer that we are talking about, to indicate the level of improvement that we want to communicate to the members. So from that dire situation of 26 disclaimer items to today, where we are talking about the qualified audit opinion on two items. And when you compare this qualification of this year and last year we had three items of a qualification. This year we reduced it by two. And those two things that we are talking about in terms of a qualification as well are matters that are within our sights and we believe that we're going to resolve. It talks to the systemic issues of our business, especially when it comes to our day-to-day maintenance. The ones under the property rates in terms of the linking of the rates to the of payments to the assets. I think it was also an important thing for us to complete the asset register. So in the next year, I think we'll be able to deal with this matter, let alone the issues of the complexity of the ratings of our properties by the municipalities, how complex that can be. So some of it is a determinant, a dependency on the systems of the municipalities. So in terms of the context of this financial statements, one is the issue of transfer of budget that I indicated. For the first time, we transferred the budget of the PMTE from the main vote to the PMTE itself, so that then we can account for the monies in PMTE as well as account for the functions in the PMTE. Then we had an issue of the bank overdraft, and the bank overdraft in the PMTE is a function of the nature of the operating environment of the PMTE that you've got to deal with. One is we do work on behalf of our client departments, we pay upfront, then we collect 60 to 90 days later. And as a result, we are funding departments to the tune of, when we actually worked out our expenditure, per month from the PMT is about 800 million rands. So if you take a recovery of 60 to 80 months, 90 days, it means we are literally funding 2.4 billion rands, you know, of departments. And hence, this will affect your bank overdraft. So just as an indication in terms of the bank overdraft. The other issue that I thought we should also just try and touch on is the issue of the application of deemed cost and transitional provisions of Directive 2. Members will remember that we are reporting that we've completed the asset register. And completed the asset register was completed all the things that as management we're going to be saying are correct with the asset register that are required by GRAP. The actual values, the actual numbers, the actual issue that it exists, you can prove ownership, all of those things. If you go back to the previous years, we had done everything else on the asset register except for one thing, and that was the application of values to the assets themselves. In the year under review, we completed that exercise, and that's what we did. Now, notwithstanding the fact that we completed the exercise on the values of the assets, the issue of Directive 2, where the actual GRAP standards allows you, in a situation of a transfer of functions, a three-year period during which you can sort out the issue of measuring the assets and liabilities that have been transferred to you. So the whole portfolio of the assets that are sitting in the main vote was transferred to the PMTE, and we had a three-year period during which we had to, you know, we had the relief not to apply a measurement to that, but we've got to indicate the progress made. In the previous year, we believe, in terms of the measurement, the cost application of to those assets, we are done to the extent of 99.9%, and that's it. And so that's the main thing that we wanted to highlight in the set of financial statements. As you'll see, if you compare the previous financial statements with those current financial statements, under the note of your property, plant, and equipment, you'll see a huge spike in terms of the number. I think last year we disclosed 17 billion rands. This year we talk about 112 billion rands in terms of the asset values that we are disclosing. Then we had a major project that we undertook. I think the minister and the DG did allude to that project, which was the issue of the debts that are owed to municipalities by government departments. Now, because we are the lead department in terms of custodianship of state property, in terms of the current dispensation, there are six national custodians, and we are the main ones in terms of our portfolio and in terms of our mandate. So we undertook this function to deal with the 5.2 or 5.4, because of the figure depending on the date, in terms of the Section 71 report of Treasury, that we are owing of the 96 billion, which is about 5.4% of the total debts that are owed to municipalities by private sector, households, and us. Ours is about 5.4%. So we took up the responsibility of coordinating and verifying these debts, so that by the time we have completed the exercise of the debt verification, we can then go to the individual custodians and allocate who owes what, so they can settle those debts. So that's a project that we undertook, and I think we've achieved quite phenomenal results with that in terms of the earlier comments that I made, that of the 3.7 billion rands debt that was that we verified, we had now actually signed off with the municipalities somewhere in the order of about 3.2 billion. And what we owe as a national department of that is about 177, which I think by now we've already settled all of it. So that are some major kind of things that impact on the financial statements. And when you look at our rates expenditure this year, you compare to last year, will be kind of a difference. Why? Because of the payments that we have to settle in the year under review. The financial position, slide 84, it's the balance sheet of the PMTE. It will show the current assets and the non-current assets, and as you can see, we are showing total assets in the current year of 116 billion rands compared to total assets in the 2015 financial year after being restated with the new numbers that we have of our property, plant, and equipment of 114 billion rands. And that's, we are trying to comment and provide reasons as to those increases. I'll not get into it for purposes of time. Under the liabilities, which is slide 85, still the financial position statement, the total liabilities, 104 billion in the current year, 112 billion in the current year, and 8.8 billion in the previous year, showing a net asset value, and a net asset value of the PMT's balance sheet of 104 billion rands in the current year compared to 105 billion rands in the prior year, restated. And I think that's a very important point that I need to emphasize, restated. So, and the deemed, and the cost, the values that you've applied in the property, plant, and equipment, I just want to just underscore the point that those are not transactional values. We've applied a principle called a deemed cost, we are saying. If at all we had paid for this, what would there have been the deemed cost? Because some of it goes back many years. I mean, these have been there forever. So we then had to apply particular methodologies to apply to get to the deemed cost. One of the methodologies that we utilized was the municipal valuation rolls, municipal valuations that municipalities do on a regular basis to properties within their jurisdiction. Not all properties are rated. So I think there's a percentage of about 15, between 15 and 20% of the total portfolio of our assets that had municipal valuation roles. Then where there are no municipal valuation roles, we then move to the next level in terms of the next method of applying a deemed cost, which was a sales comparison, which just means there's no municipal valuation role. You take the property within the jurisdiction and compare to potential sales figures, trends of similar properties in the same area, and apply a factor to get to your cost of that property. And where you don't have those sales comparison, then you go to the next level in terms of our application of our deemed cost, where we apply building indices to the assets that we had, which are published annually. And that's how we got to this 112 billion rands cost. In terms of the scale of the portfolio, I mean, the portfolio, members will know, I'm sure, when we come at some point to probably do the detailed presentation on the asset register, it's a portfolio of 92 million rand structures against or on 30,000 or 31,000 land parcels, basically. So, yes, so we're showing a net asset value of 104 billion rand in the current year. Slide 86 shows the financial performance, which shows the total revenues against the total expenditure. And you can see the total revenues that we are collecting under the different revenue lines is about 12.9 billion rand in the current year compared to 12.9 billion rand well in the prior year, rounded off. The expenditures, 13.8 billion in the current year against 11.8 billion rand in the prior year. So in the current year, we're looking at a deficit of about 923 million against 1.2 billion rand surplus in the current year. Most of this is as a result of the accounting principles that have been applied from accrual. It's not the cash. I think, let me just make that point to the members. And the explanations in terms of the commentary against to compare, you know, the differences year on year is explained in those columns that we have there. And then there's a note 87 just to remind members of what we spoke about in terms of the the budget that we completed the transfer functions from to the PMT in 14-15, the compensation goods and services and machinery and equipment budget relating to these functions were transferred to the DPW on 1st of April 2015. The PMTE subsequently developed and implemented a program by the structure on the state, and the transfer amount was calculated by DPW based on the function shift from DPW to the PMT after the budget has been agreed to in the main vote. So the main vote is the one that holds the money. The funds that you receive from the main vote are not adequate to run the business of the PMTE. The business of the PMTE is augmented by the user charges that you apply to our users for the office accommodation that you are providing them. In terms of the program budget structure, on slide 88, that's what it is, program 1 administration, program 2. Now you can realize that we start to talk to the real business of the PMTE. We're talking real estate investment services. Program 3, construction project management services. Program 4, real estate management services. Program 5, real estate information and registry services. And program 6, facilities management services. The revenue, we have compared the budget against the actual revenue that we've collected, and the variances we'll explain during the time of question when members want to ask more questions. That we've done in terms of the actual revenue stream that we are providing. Then on the expenditure side, we've done the expenditure based on the programs that we have, like we said, the 6 programs starting from administration to facilities management. And then the expenditure per economic classification, away from the programs, we've done it per economic classification in terms of our current payments, cleaning and gardening, leasing, repairs, day-to-day maintenance, municipal services, rates, composition of employees and goods and services. Those are all current payments. And then the capital payments in terms of the upgrades and refurbishments that we are doing, the machinery and equipment, and the client infrastructure that we are collecting, that we get from our clients. The accounting in terms of all of this, like I said, is a fairly complex process, chain of activities and events. We tried to explain the differences in those slides 92 on the repairs, the day-to-day, the mutual services, the rates, and the compensation, goods and services, and machinery and equipment that we have spent. The client infrastructure indicates how is it made up of, the fact that there's an amount that's been fenced for the BCOCC, for the border work that we do for the borders for the Department of Home Affairs. And then in terms of irregular expenditure, which I thought we should actually reflect on for purposes of, you know, better clarity and understanding, in the previous year, we had disclosed, and members will recall, that we disclosed an amount of 35 billion rands of irregular expenditure. However, this year we managed to deal with somewhere in the order of about 27 billion rands because we went into a process of thoroughly investigating those irregular expenditure to that extent as we had promised before. We got to a point where we could not move anywhere in terms of those investigations, and hence we then had to get to a point where with Treasury's endorsement and concurrence that 27 billion rands of that we can't do anything about. We've gotten to a point where there's nothing we could do, and hence the reduction that you see there. And then under fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we had an opening balance of 261, which is reduced to 246 due to prior period errors that we had, and we adjusted those numbers accordingly. The balance of 246 is still being investigated extensively, and progress will reflect in the current financial year of what has happened to that fruitless and wasteful expenditure. That, honourable members, completes the PMGE set of financials. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think this is time to take comment and questions from members. The first of the block is Honourable Kola Barnett, followed by Honourable Sithole, Honourable Memasiela. Shall we start there?
Thank you, Chairperson. Administration, if you could just clarify, the vacancy rate went from 54 to 1,157, but with 1,103 posts filled, there were 804 filled additional to the establishment. Now, did this restructuring the posts work in line with the Treasury determinations? I know you're working very closely with the Treasury, so I'd like an answer there. Why did your reduction of fraud and corruption risk levels fall by just 38% when your target was 50? Surely this was an absolute core focus for you, considering the number and breadth of the SIU investigations into, for example, 649 of your leases. One in three of your leases are under investigation nationwide. We know that the paying of invoices has been an issue for you for some time. Small companies are driven into bankruptcy when large entities such as Public Works don't pay their bills. And yet with all your new technology, you pay just 75 out of every 100 invoices timelessly. When are we going to see this come together? I feel as though it's been spoken about for a very long time. You prevented 100% of default judgments against the department. Now, I found that a very interesting phrase. When you say you prevented the judgments, were you found to be innocent, or did you, with an endless supply of taxpayers' money, appeal and appeal and appeal until the company charging you just threw in the towel? I've seen that happen over and over in other departments, so I'm very interested in how you handle it. Moving on to the EPWP, you failed to achieve the target by 385,007 work opportunities. And yet, I heard the minister saying much of this should be blamed on the new stringent requirements. What are these requirements? ID numbers, dates, details of what they're doing, that's hardly a stringent requirement. It's just common sense, really. So I'd like to know what it is they want that has had you in such difficulties. Also, what is your plan to deal with what I believe and see regularly is to be almost endemic corruption throughout the program. For example, there has now been an investigation into ANC councillors in Umlazi and Ilovo. This is just the tip of the iceberg, preventing anyone not holding an ANC membership card from working on any EPWP work opportunity. Now, there are various municipalities that today pull the whole community into a stadium and they put all the names in the box and they pull out the names. The box is turned around and they pull the names out and whoever's name comes out gets the jobs. And they detail all the jobs for months in advance. So there can be no corruption. Now, do you approve of such a system? Surely that's the sort of system that should be introduced countrywide, because currently the dishing out of these jobs is on the whole, left to councillors with zero oversight. So it's a recipe for disaster. Program 4, really. 0% success rate, 0 out of 7 targets. And yet they managed to spend $3.74 billion. So that is catastrophic as far as I'm concerned. The explanations aren't explanations, they're excuses. Basically, that is $3.74 billion thrown down the drain. Not a single positive result. A huge payment for absolutely no outcome. So it just says to me, I don't know why the entity is there, and I'm asking why it shouldn't be shut down. Prestige, the guidelines that you've drawn up in relation to the national key points and the security for the members of the judiciary, have they come to this committee? I believe we have oversight over such guidelines. I'd be most interested to see if they have come here, and if they haven't, I'd like to know why. Also, you seem to have staff flooding out of the department, 774 leaving, contracts expiring, resignations and retirements. That's 721 out. You're losing expertise and institutional memory at a rate of knots. So what are you doing to try and stop that, stem the tide? What is your succession plan? And then finally, moving down to the PMT, the explanation, please, in terms of just 18% of the targeted 50% bids being awarded within 56 days of closure of tender. Why aren't they being awarded immediately? I don't understand what the delay is there or why it's happening. 18% of the target is ridiculous. And please clarify the reported collection of 12.191 billion on invoices that were older than 60 days. What is that about? Who are they from? And why is there an increase of 12% when you had a target of 2% on the value of the immovable asset portfolio? What is that in actual numbers? And finally, how did you manage to secure the increased 849 of a targeted 100 parcels of vacant land for economic development initiatives? It's a wonderful thing, but I don't know how you did it, because your target was 100 and you just shot straight past that. And your real estate assets, verified 99.3% of, and I quote, identified real estate assets. What are the unidentified real estate assets, the lost properties? I mean, I go around Durban and I'm phoned all the time. There are abandoned buildings here and abandoned police flats and abandoned nurse flats and abandoned laboratories, and trying to track down who actually owns them is about 2 weeks' work on telephones, because Public Works says it's not Public Works National, it's actually Public Works Provincial. Public Works Provincial says it's not us, it's municipality. Municipality doesn't know what I'm talking about. Talk to National. So you are fobbed off, brushed off, and meanwhile, the drug lords are in there, and there are slum buildings pulling down the real estate of the area. So that is a huge issue, and I'd like to know how many buildings are still unaccounted for. I think that's about it for now. Thank you.
Honourable Member, thank you. With that bit of energy, I see people are wide awake now. Thank you. Honourable Sithole.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for presentation. But my concern, Chairperson, is that since the Minister came in and have a 7-year strategy plan, it shows that there's some achievement. But my concern, Chairperson, because that reshuffle is coming. That is not part of those ministers that's going to be reshuffled.
The reshuffle or the unshuffle or the recycling does not fall within the purview of my authority.
Okay, Chair.
It belongs with another man. Yeah. For now.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my Chairperson is that one of Program 4, because they have targeted seven programs, but they failed. Not even one that has been achieved. And in Program 5, again, they targeted four programs, but nothing that has been achieved. What are the reasons, actually? They give us the reason. Why are they not achieving their target? And the other Chairperson on the annual report, Chairperson, on page 67, where they failed to sign the service level agreement with the Parliament. What was the reason of that? Because they're supposed to sign it. And then the other one, Chairperson, is on annual, Chairperson, on page 77. On page 77, Chairperson, percentage increase in the value of immovable asset portfolio. The target was 2%. But when you check, the actual achievement is 12%. What is happening, Chairperson? If they can unpack that one, because I don't know what it was. How can you target 2 and then you achieve 12%? And on page 84, Chairperson, on page 84, the number of supplies freehold residential properties that are for revenue generations, their target was 500, but they only achieved 7%. Actually, what are the other challenges, if they can give us the challenges? Why? Because if you target 500, but you achieve only 7%. Only 7. And the last one, Chairperson, is on page 87. On page 87, Chairperson, on number of work opportunities created through maintenance programs, they targeted 500, but they only achieved 3,269. It is not tiring, Chairperson, because once you target something, you have to achieve what you have targeted for. And then the last one, Chairperson, is the payment of contractors. The small contractors have been killed because of this non-payment. So I talk about 30 days, but they fail to achieve that. They fail to achieve, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Siyabonga mhlonishwa. Memasiyela, inako yakho.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me start by acknowledging and thanking the department for the presentation that they have done today, and also congratulate them for the unqualified financial statement that they've got, which is a good thing, knowing that we are from a disclaimer at one stage. So there is an improvement. Still on that one, I want also to say we are also pleased that the asset register is also completed, which is also encouraging. The monies that are being owed to municipalities, the report indicates that there is a considerable payments that have been done so far, even though they are not yet completed. This has been a very thorny issue for some time. For many, many years, even while I was still in the municipality, it was a problem. So today, the way you are reporting it shows that we have done a lot of changes on that one. So I want to commend the department for that. The other issue that I wanted to talk to is about the lot of money that is paid to rentals. How far are we in trying to reduce this one so that maybe we use our own buildings? I know that to come up with a building can be expensive, but if we do that bit by bit, at the end of the day, we'll find ourselves reducing this lot of money that is used there. When we get to, I think it is number 16, page 16, Extended Public Works Program. We are reporting that there is a lot of problems as far as reporting is concerned, especially from the municipality. What are we doing as the department to try and assist in this case so that maybe we could have some officials who are educated from municipalities to take care of the EPWP so that they champion this issue and make sure that we also capacitate them so that at the end of the day we get the real issue. Because in most cases I realize we are going to have a lot of issues with the Auditor General because of this, which is not really under the department themselves, but from the municipalities or different municipalities. The other issue that I wanted Honorable Chair to talk about is the amount of money which they said they underspend in the EPWP project, about 10 million, if I saw it well, it is 10 million. To me, this one, honestly, it is unacceptable because this is the area where we depend on to increase the number of people who will be employed and reduce poverty in our area. So if we are going to have this much underspending in this very same EPWP, it's really worrisome. What are we doing as the department to ensure that this does not happen again in the coming financial year? I think those are the ones that I've noted, Honorable Chair. But again, there is something else. I think maybe it was explained, but I missed it somehow. What is that? All right, I'll come back if I have another time. Thanks for now.
Moetapile Raleboga. Let me afford the minister a chance to make a contribution before he dashes off to a teleconference. Yes, sir.
Thanks very much, Chairperson and members. I just want to pick up one issue which has been politicized, the issue of the EPWP. There have been problems with EPWP where some people are not following the guidelines as we have given them from the different municipalities. I want to appeal to Honorable Kolapana that it's not in the ANC municipalities. It has happened in the DA municipalities, even here in Cape Town, where there have been serious accusations. And our approach is very simple.
Pardon, Chair, if I may. I beg your pardon. The issue was raised, Chair, about Umlazi and Ilovo. Those are not run by the DA. They are run by the ANC. So that was a very sweeping attack, and I have to answer.
Honourable members, when we make statements and there are rejoinders to those statements, let's have the rejoinder, and I will give you a chance if you have further remarks to make, you see. But I must say that the issue in regard to the matter which has just been raised, it has been raised several times. and the issue has been canvassed and responded to several times, that it's not only in the municipalities where members of one political party are guilty of that offense. It's across political party lines. But if the issue has been raised, it has to be responded to. So can you continue, and then we'll proceed from there, Minister.
And I can tell you, Chair, we have investigated this particular matter in relation to Umlaas. And our DDG is going to be later on giving a very clear response to say that was just a hype. It was not in relation to this particular program, in Umlaas in particular. But also part of the problem is when people raise issues and do not give evidence and just raise them as general issues, it gives a problem. Thus far, nobody has come to us, but we have gone to do an investigation in relation to this area. And MTRS is going to be able to go into the details of this particular matter. But despite that, whenever there are problems, we believe that give us the evidence and we deal with those issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. This is what we have encouraged members to do across political party lines in the past bit. We are from different provinces, we are from different constituencies. If you come across anything that is untoward, provide the requisite evidence so that the matter can be investigated without fear or favor of political affiliation. The next member we had the hand up. Memasela, what of it?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. There was one that I said I can't find it here, which I omitted, which I also said maybe it was explained, I did not hear it, on page 71, where the unauthorized expenditure is exactly the same 2014-15, 2015-16, 161, 169 on both sides, is exactly the same. I don't know how it was explained, if it was.
At this stage, I see no further hands from members of Parliament. Honorable Kopane, welcome back, Matt. Good to see that you are alive and healthy. Welcome back to the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, my first question is regarding the ongoing concerns regarding the PMTE. The last financial statement, or the last annual report, it was saying that the bank overdraft of the PMT last year by the 31st of March 2015, it was 674 million. And then this time is 1.474 million. Now it's really escalating. And according to the AG, it clearly says that the current liability, they exceed the current asset, which means technically they are bankrupt, according to the statement. And according to their PMT, they keep on saying that they are implementing the turnaround strategy for the entity. But I just wanted to find out, Chair, if this thing is coming year in, year out, what is it exactly? Do they have a plan to resolve the situation of this bank overdraft? Because it's like it's escalating, it's like something is not happening. My second question, Chair, is regarding with regard to the department, Program 4, that is the Property and Construction Industry Policy Research. This program is crucial, Chair, with regard to the policy formulation for the construction and property. But among other things, Chair, it clearly indicated here some of the targets that were supposed to be reached were not reached. I'll mention a few of them. The draft Department of Public Works white paper was neither drafted nor gazetted for public comment. the development of IDT business cases to establish it as an institution of government, but was not submitted to cabinet for endorsement. I'll mention the last one, the first draft bill for amendment to State Land Disposal Act was not developed. Others were not even drafted for the approval of the minister. And this is worrying, Chair, because all these major targets, they were not achieved. If maybe they can explain to us why they were not achieved. What is also worrying, Chair, if you check in terms of the human resource, the very same program four, they had a high vacancy position of 969 vacant position. And this is worrying. Is it the reason why maybe they're not achieving their objective? Because that is the largest one. I know my colleague, she also mentioned about people leaving the department. But with regard to that, Chair, I would just wanted to find out, does the department have instituted any succession plan, particularly in the transferring of skills prior to the people, retiring? It is also said that it's about 452 contracts that will be expiring. I just wanted to find out in which area where these contract workers were employed. There are also about 97 retired people who have been employed. Maybe the department can explain in which department those people will be employed. Chair, with regard to the Auditor General report, I do understand in terms of their irregular expenditure, it comes from the historical background from many years. But according to the AG, year in and year out, they keep on saying that the department, in many instances, they fail to take prevention steps to prevent the irregular expenditure. If maybe they can give us do they have any plan to make sure that they rectify the thing, because it's still going on? The other question is regarding the management that was not successful in addressing the high vacancy rate at the senior management level. Why is it like this? Can I check the other one? Chair, my other concern is with regard to Program 2. When you check the annual report from page 76 to page 79, in terms of the indicators, there's a lot of duplicates. Why are there so many duplicates? If maybe they can explain that to us. My last question, Chair, it will be regarding PMT, that they don't actually provide allocations in terms of the staff per program. If maybe they can explain to us why is it like that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mekopania, thank you for your contribution. I would also like to welcome back Honorable Matebe from a spell of illness. That the two of them are seated next to each other does not mean that that is the sick bay. Honorable Kolaban?
Yeah, sorry, Chair. I forgot, left out two of the questions. One was on the construction project management. Not one of the 774 schools were completed within the planned construction period. Now, if I heard, I think it was the minister, maybe in the DG correctly, there seemed to be blame put on the Department of Education for not actually supplying the funds. Now, I mean, you've got a highly successful intergovernment coordination program, got 100% in terms of its targets, and yet something's happened here because Public Works couldn't build any schools for a whole year. So an explanation there, and the final one was... under the Auditor General's opinion, he said there was ownership of properties for which rates had been paid. The ownership could not be confirmed. So how do you take in rates from properties and you don't know who owns the properties? I found that an absolutely extraordinary statement by the Auditor General. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kolaban. The advisor to the minister. Mpo, is becoming shorter and shorter. I'm not sure if sleep is dragging him down and down. He's almost under the desk there. So can somebody retrieve him, pull him up a bit? The head is hardly visible. You are sinking there, Chief. Honorable Kopan.
My apology, Chair. My last question. The DG, what I like about what he said, he mentioned all the areas where there are challenges and the remedial action. But unfortunately, according to his remedial action, there's no time frame when all those things are going to be resolved. It's only on the way forward in terms of the state building not optimized. It's only one where they mentioned. If maybe he can give us the time frame when all those things are going to be achieved.
Thank you very much. I think this is an appropriate time for a rejoinder from the department. Ladies and gentlemen, your opportunity to earn your living for the day.
Thanks, Chief.
I'm still not sure if Mpo is sitting on the floor or is sitting on a chair. Are you sitting on the floor? Or you're sitting on a lower chair?
No, the chair is very low.
Oh,
it's very
low. Animal farm, all animals are not equal. Okay. Proceed, DG. Thank you.
Yeah. I'll ask the head of BMD to first start and then CFO will follow. Mr. Mishis?
Thank you, DG. Thank you very much, Chair and honorable members. I'm already responding. Of the 704 resignations that the members have noted, maybe just quickly, just to assist.
Could you kindly direct the mic
yes.
towards your mouth?
Sure. Of the 774 people who have exited the department, I just want to quickly say, 37 of those is they passed on, and 172 are resignations, and 452 is expiry of contracts, and transfers 1, discharge due to ill health, is 11, and dismissal through misconduct is 4, and retirement is 97. Of that number, almost about 500 of that 774 are actually people at levels lower than 3. In other words, it's your lower categories of employees from the cleaners and so on. You'll remember that we employed a huge pool of your low-level employees to do your low-level functions, for instance, around the EPWP programs, and it will be among those expiries. For senior management, it's about only 2 senior managers who left the department during this financial year. So the resignation are actually at the lower level rather than at the senior level. In respect of succession planning, members will know that the Public Service Act has one recruitment policy approach, which is all positions must be open up for competition and advertised. And then that is, in essence, kills any succession planning. But nevertheless, the department does have a succession plan. That's why the program of young professionals, where we bring in young people in various technical skills in order to develop their problems in the property areas, facility management, and even in technical professionals like engineers and so on, are brought in to ensure that we're able to grow our own timber within the department in that sense. That is, in essence, our approach. But also relating to the default judgment, the department in the past 5 years had the misfortune of the sheriff of the court just rocking up in the department, pointing up at assets and attaching assets and indicating that there's been a decision against the department and there was no defense from the side of the department. So what we've improved is actually where there are cases the department had to defend, we have now ensured that the department does defend it. There's no default judgment against the department. So it's not about mere settlement, but it's about improving our systems to ensure that the state is able to be defended in whatever cases are there. And that's the reason for the improvement. So it's an improvement of our systems in that regard. Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much, Director General. I'm just concerned that your chairperson of your audit committee, I'm sure he needs a glass of water, is struggling to be awake. I can't see you several times asleep in my meeting, Chief. Rather drink water to stay awake. Shall we proceed?
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson and members. The question that relates to the risk of fraud will be responded to in two parts. The first part, really, the reason why one looks at the risk decreases has to be a reflection of the governing structures that have been put in place to strengthen the environment in the first place. And I think one needs to appreciate that on the front of the governing structures, we've got a well-functioning risk unit. In fact, the operationalization of the governance risk and compliance branch played a major role in managing the risk. We've got an anti-corruption unit that is dealing with a lot of matters on a progressive basis. We've got a functioning risk unit. We've got an internal audit function that is well established. The response on the leases, Imtiaz will go into a bit more detail as the head of that branch, but my understanding is that the investigation of the SIU is linked to the original proclamation. There is no new proclamation on leases. So it was linked to the previous proclamation, and those are the ongoing leases that were in place. Imtiaz will go into the specific details as far as that is concerned. There is a question that he's asking around the rapid increase in the valuation. I think that's a natural progression in terms of the finalization of the asset register. You'll recall that the asset register was finalized in the year under review at the end of March, and the valuation principles leading up to an increase of the valuation to a value of 112 billion is the main driver. And that's just the culmination of a three-year process in finalizing the asset register. The question of availing of land for economic development is not land that we have acquired, it's land that is on our asset register and ownership. And it's mainly driven by the requests that come in. One of the requirements that GIAMA places upon us is to say before we consider the use of a property, for example, an investment decision for disposal, we need to engage with other organs of state or other programs of government to see if there's a need there. Coincidentally, the main requests have been coming in from state-owned entities, municipalities, etc. And the use of those properties for economic development has been ranging from energy programs or projects, registration of servitudes, and human settlements, developments, etc. So the number that is there is predominantly driven by the nature of the requests that we have received in that particular year. When it comes to the issue of whether we've got lost properties or not, I think we have responded to this matter a number of times, particularly after we have finalized the register. That pertains to at the time when we finalized the register, it was just around 1,200 properties for which there was a problem with the geolocation or the cadastral data, which resulted in us not being able to locate those properties for physical verification. We committed that during this financial year we will deal with those matters. And we are just left with a few hundred properties as far as ensuring that the reconciliation or the ultimate reconciliation to the deeds registry and to the surveyor general information is absolutely confirmed. the comment as to abandoned properties, I think there is a reality that in a lot of instances we do get questions and there's a misunderstanding of whether the properties in question are our properties or they are provincial properties. The reality of the situation from our perspective, when we did the asset register, we ensured that we reconciled to the deeds register, where there is still room or a risk for those types of misunderstandings is where the vesting process is not absolutely complete as to whether the property is vested in Westland or in province, and the auditors do check for that. And we also ensure that as part of the program of finalizing the information and the vesting program, we get all of that information across the provinces and ourselves absolutely dealt with.
Chair, if I may just ask a two-finger on that particular one. I see that you've incorporated, I think, the KZN provincial asset register, perhaps into the larger asset register. I just wondered when the other eight provinces would be done in that regard. Is that what actually happened?
It's not an incorporation. Remember, we are two different spheres of government. So what we do is we account for our asset register as national. One of the things that we have committed to over time is to ensure that government between national and provincial has got a single line of sight in terms of what provinces and national owns. Progressively, what we are doing is we are getting the information from the provinces and we are progressively building a database of all the assets to provide that one national and provincial perspective for government. So that is a progressive process. The question of the utilization of state versus leased properties always has to start with an assessment of the extent to which we use our state-owned facilities. And the DG did cover the part that says the utilization of state-owned facilities is to the extent of 96%. Best available information will inform that any occupancy rate above 90% is an exceptional occupancy rate relative to the market, because there is, like any other immovable assets, downtime and specific circumstances as to why certain properties cannot be utilized. They may not be fit for purpose and so forth. You will remember that of the 92,500 properties, there is 54% that constitutes specialized facilities, your courts, your police stations, your prisons, etc. We've got approximately 36% of that portfolio, which is residential. So in essence, we are quite comfortable that at 96% occupancy, although the numbers are large, it is quite a progressive number. That's on the one hand. The point being that it is not going to be an overnight migration from state-owned into leased facilities. But I'm going to share with you some major developments that are going to have a significant impact into answering the question that's being asked. And I think the program, which is the flagship, precinct development is starting to help us with those types of scenarios. I'll give you a quick example. The CBD of Pretoria constitutes just over 706,000 square meters of office space, of which as government we are a footprint of 95%. We are looking at the next phase of precinct development in Pretoria between the northern and southern gateway with a development potential of at least 700,000 square meters, which will significantly change the landscape in terms of the occupancy of state-owned facilities within Pretoria. So that's one of the planned developments that we have in place. But of course, in the last year alone, we have acquired Telkom Towers, which produced an additional 106,000 square meters of state-owned facilities, and the feasibility informed us that from a state perspective, over a 10-year period, it will result in savings of at least 1 billion rand over that period of time. So we have done those exercises, and it's a progressive exercise. And I think when we were here about a year ago, we committed that we would also establish a research unit. It's fully functional. It's providing us with proactive information in terms of some of the decisions that I'm speaking about. And I think I can leave it there, Chair.
Thank you very much, sir. Let's proceed. I'm also looking at the time. Although we had sought permission and obtained permission to continue until 5 o'clock, but the reality is there's a three-line whip in Parliament today. So members would have to be in Parliament by 2 o'clock. That's the challenge that I have right now. Shall we proceed?
Thank you very much, DG. Chairperson, I will try and address three issues. The one is related to the reduction of fraud risk to 38% instead of 50%, the investigation of leases by the SIU, as well as the EPWP matter in Umlazi and Ilovo in Durban. Chairperson, I'll comment with the issue of EPWP in Umlazi and Ilovo in Durban. What I want to say at the outset is that we found that these projects are not exactly EPWP projects. They are Itegwini projects. They are administered and funded by that particular municipality. So it's outside the scope of EPWP, and EPWP is not involved at all in these particular projects. However, we did investigate the matter further, and we interviewed the complainants, both at Umlazi as well as at Ilovo. And they compiled affidavits in the presence of the SEPs in their respective areas, alleging that they were informed by certain councillors that they would not be receiving any EPWP opportunities or opportunity to participate in these programs, given that they were without the ANC membership cards. That is the standard allegation by all the complainants in both Umlazi as well as in Ilovo. And there was a huge group of complainants, and each group was represented by a leader who spoke on behalf of the group. So, Chairperson, what we also did was we also interviewed the speaker at the Itegwini municipality, as well as certain senior officials at the municipality, including the EPWP office. And what we were able to do at the municipality was to confirm that the projects that were referred to are Itegwini municipality projects and not EPWP projects, for one. Second of all, the speaker interviewed the councillors who were accused of this favoritism. And what was found is that the councillors denied any of the allegations, or all of the allegations, that they're of political bias and having made these statements. And they also indicated that they, as individuals, are not involved with those particular projects, which according to the municipality was administered through a separate office in which councillors were not involved. So, Chairperson, in the final analysis, what you have is hearsay, what we call in investigation terms, the one party saying this and the other party saying this. So the allegations could not be substantiated. But what we did here, the discussion obviously led to a lot of acrimony between our investigators and the municipality. And the municipality undertook to issue a circular, nonetheless, given the allegations, to remind their officials within EPWP and outside EPWP that with respect to job creation, these initiatives must not be accompanied by any form of favoritism. So this is what we were able to do and to conclude with this matter. Chairperson, moving on to the next issue of...
Before you move on to the next issue, I think it would be propitious for you to submit your report to the committee clerk so that it becomes part of the record that there's been issues identified by members of parliament, and this is how far you've been able to go in regard to this issue. So if there's a recurrence, then we can add to that type of report back to parliament.
Chair, the second part of my question was that there are various municipalities where, in order to take out any possibility of bias, they call the community together, they put all their names in a box, they total individuals, some other person pulls the names out, and they need 10 for this job, 20 for that job, 50 for this job. There's no possibility that it's being handed out for favors. I just wondered if that is being considered elsewhere.
Even in regard to that, I would suggest that the suggestion has been made here in the meeting. But if we could have a formal submission as to how we could possibly obviate this type of behavior. So that sounds like a fair and good suggestion. Articulate it, send it officially to the department. What? Shall we continue?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, with respect to these leases, this assertion that one-third of the leases in the department are under investigation, Chairperson, we also noted the number of media statements during the week making similar assertions. What I want to clarify is that during 2012-2013, the department, as part of phase one of the turnaround program, investigated all its leases. And at the conclusion of that process, 2,162 leases were reviewed as part of the overall lease investigation. And at the conclusion of the investigation, the minister took a view that given some of the findings of that lease investigation conducted by the department, that the entire lease portfolio should be handed to the SIU for further investigation to determine two things. On the one hand, they should determine whether any leases were awarded without following fair and proper procurement processes, and second of all, if any of these initiatives were accompanied by elements of fraud and corruption. So what transpired is, as a result of the departmental investigation, 2,162 leases, which was the entire lease database, was handed to the SIU, and on the back of that, motivation was developed, and the president issued a proclamation for the investigation of all the leases. So essentially, the department initiated this process, and all the leases are subject to review. Chairperson, what I can say is that on the 27th of August 2014, the president issued proclamation R59 of 2014, and that resulted in the investigation looking at leases that were acquired between January 2003 to the 27th of August 2015. And the SIU commenced their work then on April 2015. At this particular moment in time, Chairperson, what we have is the SIU has completed or is completing 267 investigations of their phase one of 546 priority leases. And on the back of that, the SIU has recommended to us, as DPW, to discipline 13 of our staff. And this was referred to our Labor Relations Unit to process. They are also engaging in four civil matters to look at recovering money from private companies. They've referred 12 criminal matters to the police. They've obtained three acknowledgement of debts for 213,000 rands. And there are overpayments and recoveries to the tune of 15 million rand currently being undertaken between the SIU and the department itself, sometimes through a repayment by the lessor, but more often than not, you find that the lessor is still a lessor of the department, and there is a netting off of a claim by the department against these payments being made to the lessor. So, Chairperson, what appears to be the case at this moment in time, after the conclusion of phase one, the SIU will determine whether it's worth going forward, because it's essentially a proactive detection review sort of investigation. And the SIU will determine whether there's a cost benefit, because we are recovering 15 to 20 million in phase one, but the investigation fees are 50 million. So there'd be this kind of judgment call. But this was an effort initiated by the department, and these are the numbers, and that's where they come from. Chairperson, moving on to the final...
Before we move on, Chair, may I ask, that was very complex with a lot of figures and detail in. Could we maybe get a copy of that? It was just too much to take down. Thank you.
Send it to the committee, and it will accordingly be made available to all members.
Thank you.
Chairperson, I will do that. Chairperson, the final comment I'd like to make is regarding the fraud risk, and that the head of the PMT also touched on it Chairperson, I think what we have here is a very novel idea about reducing fraud and corruption and measuring fraud and corruption, which you know is impossible to actually do. So this is really what we call a proxy indicator, and it's based on a measurement of the impact and likelihood of all fraud risk in the department, and these are quantified into a value. And what we do is we develop mitigation plans to ensure that we reduce the level of fraud risk. For example, if we have a fraud risk or conflict of interest, if we have a new system of declaration of business interests, we see that as a part of our mitigation system. If we have day-to-day maintenance where there's a high incidence of fraud and corruption and we introduce new controls, we'll see it as a mitigation measure. So this is what this is about, and I do believe that a 50% reduction in 1 year was perhaps overambitious. This is something that has been transpiring for many years, and to reduce it by 50% in 1 year was overambitious. So, Chairperson, what we're doing is we've reduced it between 30 and 40%. And what we're looking to do is to take a more long-term view and to reduce fraud and corruption to minimal levels over a five-year period. But that the Honorable Member made mention of the fact that surely there should be a priority area. And in fact, it is. That's why we are measuring it. In fact, we put ourselves up to discuss this at length because our anti-corruption strategy is very holistic and very deep in the extent to which it's seeking to address fraud and corruption. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, sir. Yes,
sir. Yeah, thanks, Chair. Let me try and answer some of the other questions that were asked. There was a question on the payment of invoices to the contractors, especially the small ones, the fact that you are not doing it on time. I think we should concede to that this is one of our real challenges to try and resolve. And there's a number of contributing factors to this matter. One is, you know, the whole process, or just our business process and our operating model and context. We operate 11 regional offices throughout the country. And in certain instances, the regional office is located hundreds of kilometers away from the actual work where the work has been done. And to verify that work before a payment can be made, because it's part of the payment process, the work needs to be verified and certified. It means a person who must verify that, because they are stationed at a particular center, which normally is the capital cities of the provinces, they have to travel all the way to do that, and that takes time. If you take, for instance, Northern Cape, for instance, I mean, you have an office in Kimberley, it's the regional office, work gets done in Pofada at the court, and before you pay the work in Pofada, you need to, somebody sign it off, verify the work is done. That distance, that's number one. So I think that operating context is quite a useful one for us to comprehend. And the other is that, you know, there's we are also overzealous in terms of our reporting. I mean, what you said is, in terms of the definition of what's an invoice, a compliant invoice must be the one that's reported. But because we've just been reporting, so we've actually created the numbers, some of which would not have gone through a process of verification to determine the veracity of the invoice in terms of compliance. And the numbers are the way they are. Well, the introduction of the new systems that we've put in place, I think that will start to come right. I think as we improve, things get better, and it looks like we are actually regressing. We have introduced an invoice tracking system which we've developed in-house. The beauty of running a turnaround and a change process is that you can acquire the appropriate skills that can help you with these kind of things. So we've actually developed an in-house invoice tracking system, automated, which will be integrated to our operating systems so that at a click of a button, we can tell what's happening. Today, as we are sitting here, we can, at any given point in time, determine how many invoices are paid within 30 days, how many are paid outside of 30 days, how many are outstanding, and of the outstanding ones, what is the age of those invoices, and who's responsible. Now, we have all that information, and it's because of the efforts that we put in place to try and deal with this matter, which is an issue of compliance and, and, and that. And I think one of the other issues is that we've also got to understand that or remember that the SCM system that we use is so complex, which presupposes that you've got a complex official base of officials to manage the system. In addition, you also have a very sophisticated supplier contractor base. And that's not the case. I mean, it's such a complex system that, you know, people are battling to get things right, to be able to do the appropriate things. Hence, invoices taking long before you pay. But it's not actually, a justification for non-payment. I think we have put it that we want to see 100% payment being done. And we are on this one on a continual basis. We never put take our eyes off the ball when it comes to this one. The next question related to Program 4, that we spent 3.74 billion rands and there's zero achievement in terms of the performance on Program 4. That money has been lost and we might as well just shut down the branch. The bulk of this money, Honourable Member Kolabana, is actually transfers. That's where transfers are happening from the main board. Transfers to the PMTE, transfers to the CBE, the Council of Built Environment, transfers to the CIDB, the GRIMA SA, all are coming out of Program 4. The actual warm bodies in Program 4 to do the kind of thing that needs to be done, it's in terms of the spend, we talk about 35 to 40 million rand spend, and that's where it is, and the victims are there. So in essence, the monies and the bulk of those money that you're saying are transfers, of the 3.7 billion transfers, I think we can say almost at a clear level of certainty that about 3.6 billion rands of that 3.7 billion rands goes to the PMTE, which we account for fully within a separate set of financial statements of the PMTE. We've reported what happens in the PMTE, and that accounts for the 3.6 billion rands. And tied to your question, which you asked as well, was that you have 12 billion invoices that you collected. Where do those come from, of the 13? I think here we are indicating the total number of billings that we are doing against the billings that we are getting. If you look at our budget structure, where is our spend? Our spend is on leases, 4 billion. Our spend is on capital, client capital, 3.5 billion that we get money from our client departments. We do projects for them. That's about 3.5 billion. Our spend is on, our planned maintenance program, which is about 2.5 billion. Our spend is about 1.5 billion on unplanned maintenance, gardening and cleaning. So that's where the 12 billion, we recover these monies from our clients. And that's where the 12 billion rand comes from. So if you look at the PMT, the transfer from the National Public Works Department is 3.5 billion. But the PMTE project or program is almost about 14 billion rands that we, money throwing around. So that's, I wanted to just create that linkage between the PMTE and the transfers that we are doing. Then there was a question on the EPWP project and the expenditure of about 10 million and all that. I think this has not really affected the actual creation of the work opportunities at the level it's supposed to happen. The transfers, the only other expenditure on the transfers is 600,000 rand, to the Department of Provincial Department of Health. Because the money that are meant for the job creation of work opportunities are the transfers that you are doing. The under expenditure related to the office of the EPWP within the public works, Department of Public Works, not the actual transfers to the municipalities and provinces. That part, I think we almost had 100% transfers, and that's where the impact of work opportunities is being found. Then there was a question on the bank overdraft, that last year it was 674, this year is 1.4 billion rand, are we regressing? It's a very interesting point. It's a good observation that we made. I mean, here it can be very difficult to explain the bank overdraft as at year end. I can explain the bank overdraft on an average over the year, because then it goes according to the pattern of payments that have been made and billings that have been done. And I can just give you a bit of a outline of that. At year end, there's this concept called fiscal dumping, where departments come and put money. Ooh, where can we put this money? Public works, you know, we owe public works, we do whatever. They come and put the money. Last year, that's what happened. That's why the bank overdraft went way down. This year, I can't explain it. It happened, but not to the extent that it happened. The bank overdraft is 1.4. On average, I did say, we spend about plus minus 800 million rands. And remember, the plus minus 800 million rands that we spend on a monthly basis, we pay it up front. It takes us 60 to 90 days to get it back. So, like I said, if you do the maths, that's about 2.4 billion rands that we have, almost subsidizing departments. That in itself is reflected in the bank overdraft that we are carrying. So in essence, the bank overdraft should be around that level. But we are working towards the change in the business process or business model of the PMT to accommodate the situation. And I think there was a question about irregular expenditure that the AG statement says we did not take preventative steps to prevent irregular expenditure. I think honourable members will realise that if I can do a trend of our irregular expenditure that originates in a particular year over time, you'll see a significant decline to expect to the extent of, you know, very minimal in terms of irregular expenditure that we are creating and depositing to the account. That is actually getting wiped off. The numbers are reducing significantly. The unfortunate thing with irregular expenditure is an issue of compliance. I mean, if you have one rent of irregular expenditure, the AG has the responsibility to raise that issue. And you'll see now, in our audit report, the mention is that the department did not in all instances, you know, and you'll see that kind of qualification. But they have to, they're bound to report. Even if it can be one rent, it can be one cent. It's not the quantum, it's the conduct, it's a qualitative factor that you have to consider. And hence, it will be reported on. So yes, I mean, we accept the fact that we are not supposed to have any irregular expenditure, and I think that's what we are striving towards.
Thank you. We have taken
steps. Yeah.
We have taken steps to deal with this thing. We've developed a policy on irregular expenditure. We follow it up. Unfortunately, some of it originates from contracts that were signed some time ago. And we want to eliminate, as you can see, the trend is that we want to eliminate. I want no irregular expenditure on these books. Where it does happen, we get it investigated, we take action now against the parties that are involved. The other unfortunate thing is if the bid adjudication committee misses the date of a certificate, what is it, the SARS certificate, tax clearance certificate, and they make a decision after it has expired, that becomes a regular explanation. And it's some of those things, just a non-compliance of that kind of nature. And we have I believe our policy is comprehensive enough to deal with the occurrence, as you can see, in terms of the trend.
Just a second. The gentleman behind and that Sirote, I'm not sure if you have taken medication that's making you drowsy. But it does not look good for members of parliament to see you all the time dozing off, you see. You are part of the delegation of the department. I'm seated here. People can see that. It's not my responsibility to keep you awake. Continue, sir.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question on, I think it was on page... I don't recall the page, page 71, or slide 71, which indicated an amount of 261 last year and 261 this year. I think that's not an expenditure. It's It's called unauthorized expenditure, but it's an account balance at the end. So what we are saying is that it's the same because that balance is not increased nor reduced. So we brought it forward the same as it was. And the total amount of unauthorized expenditure that we need to resolve this year is exactly the same amount of unauthorized expenditure this year. And it's the same transactions. So, yeah, that's the explanation. Then the last question I think that I almost missed out, as my colleague reminded me, is the one that the audit finding that says the AG could not link the property rates payment to the actual assets in the asset register. Maybe I might just give a bit of a little background to the issue of the custodianship of assets. I've spoken about the pre-1994 dispensation, how many of the custodians the country had, you know, in terms of your six self-governing territories, your four homelands, South Africa, so many provinces, and what happened post-1994, we had to pull all these asset registers, consolidate them, and then apply them to the new custodianship that has been set post-1994. And the custodians of post-27 April 1994 is the nine provinces, the premiers, and they can assign anybody to be, in terms of the executive, to be the custodians of the assets. In addition to that, you've got two main national custodians, Public Works and Road Development for the land. And in terms of the national departments, we've got four more custodians. Now, this is a very complex thing, very complex. So you have all these different, you know, custodians of assets. That's why the asset register program has been what it was. Then you've got a situation where you have the Property Rates Act that exempted departments or government from paying rates. And that got repealed, I can't remember which year it was, which is I think about 2005, it got repealed, that government departments must now start to pay. The municipality started the process of rating properties. However, I think the extent of this is just too large. They have not done all the assets ratings. Now, in terms of the current practice and the law, what it says is all properties will belong to the different custodians. And where, in the event that a property cannot be attached to any custodian, it shall be deemed to be another custodianship of Public Works. So whether we like it or not, when a municipality builds, rates a property, and goes to different people and say it's not ours, the default position is that it's ours, which is a very difficult thing for us, I mean, if you know what I mean. But we have an obligation. That's what it says. If no custodian can be determined, it shall be deemed to be Public Works. And that's according to a sector-specific guide on the immovable assets of state. And that's why we have the situation that we have in terms of the finding. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you very much. Good folks, I'm not sure if we can go beyond this point. The chief is watching the room, says it's 21 minutes to 2, and members still have to prepare to get into the house at 2. So what I would like to suggest is that perhaps we leave it at this point, and then we'll check our next meeting. If there are further issues that we need to canvass, then we'll continue with this process. But we also have the challenge of the BRRR process that we have to deal with as this portfolio committee. So, but for today, for the department and the entity that reported, this is how far we can traverse down this road. Honorable members, thank you very much. Officials, thank you very much. We'll advise you as to how we move forward. Next Tuesday's meeting has been scheduled, so we'll stay in touch with members and the department. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so,